I'm John, and I'm an average alcoholic, and I'm happy to be dealt in for another hand today. I haven't been able to make this meeting lately. I used to make it regularly, but my teaching schedule changed. I teach online, so I'm usually teaching about this time. And I took the day off, as it were. I'm happy to be here. It's good to see everybody. And I just learned about my friend Declan's passing, which is very sad for me. He and I had kind of become close online. We used to speak about once a week until just recently, when he wasn't able to anymore because of his health difficulties. And he'd asked me not to talk about it in the meetings, and which I honored, of course. He was one of our, considered himself a member of our Free Thinkers Living Sober group in the Verde Valley. And I'm in the middle of working on a memorial service for another friend who was just shy of 35 years sober when she passed this last month. I guess that's kind of what happens if you stay sober and grow old. You know, this is what goes on. As someone was saying, the old saying, how do you get 40 years? Well, you don't drink and you don't die. And I never thought I'd make it past 35 years of age, less 41 years sobriety. I'm a 60s kid, and was about live fast and die hard or die young or something like that. And I did my best to try and do that, but I got worn out by the time I was in my late 20s, actually. And I got sober at age 31, which in those days was a young person. And now I have daughters who got sober younger than that. So I guess it's not a young person anymore. I spent some time in a ministry going around preaching Jesus to people and that sort of thing. But drinking sort of took me out of that work. For some reason, people frown on drunks, which is interesting, because I know a lot of drunks who are priests and rabbis and ministers, so I'm not sure it's all that unusual. But by the time I got to about 8 years in that work, I ended up leaving and coming back to California and joining up with my family's business. And boy, I spent about 3 years really in the cups, as they say. What I really wanted to do was die, frankly. And I don't mean that in a dramatic way, though it sounds dramatic. It probably was. After several attempts, it was clear that God wasn't going to let me. And that, by the way, is spelled G-A-W-D. So the last house on the road was AA, you know. I had a friend that used to come into our business, I knew he was sober. Every drunk in town knew who was going to AA and who wasn't in my little town. And he'd come in and he'd say, you know, if you ever want to go sit and have coffee, I'm available. That's about all he said. That was his 12-step call on me, but I knew what he meant. So I kind of knew where to go. When I first came in, I didn't really worry about people knowing that I was going to AA or not going to AA, because just about everybody who knew me in town knew I was a drunk. it wasn't a secret. And those early years actually were quite a struggle, actually. Because I had this little anxiety problem. I couldn't keep my legs from moving fast. And I didn't smoke when I got sober, but in those days, smoking was pretty ubiquitous. And so I started smoking after I had about 6 months sober. more from self-defense than anything else, I think. But the room sometimes you could barely see from all of the smoke. It was pretty bad. But my first several years, I was in and out of being suicidal. I had a sponsor who used to say, you know, you'd be killing the wrong person. And you don't get to leave until you get your exit visa. And I hung in there, basically, is what I did. And I'm not saying it was all bad. I mean, the one thing that was good in those days, most of the people that were getting sober hung out together. And we went to coffee together, and we went to movies together, and went to concerts together, and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that that's a real important part. Of course, with COVID, it makes it awfully difficult. But now we can go to a meeting just about 24/7 if we want to and hang out that way. So that's pretty cool. You know, we get sober in whatever situation we're in. And as my wife is fond of saying, you just have to make a decision and then stick to it. And that's pretty much what I did. I mean, I wanted to stay sober. I hadn't been able to stay sober on my own. And even in the religious work, I hadn't been able to stay sober that way. And of course, over the years, I've grown to no longer even believe in God in the sense of a God that is out there somewhere, you know, and omnipotent and omniscient and kind of Superman and able to come in and make my football team win, that kind of thing. I've kind of gone more toward, I think that's why Declan and I got along pretty well. He and I shared real similar views on things, and we used to talk about once a week, and I really valued that friendship. I think that that's one of the most important things in sobriety for me is the friendships that I've developed over the years, and the new friendships. You know, I really enjoy listening to people who are newer. I try not to talk too often, because they told me a long time ago that the hardest thing as you get sober longer is to keep it green. And for me, keeping it green is really important. You know, I like to keep growing and learning and changing. And I spent a lot of time as an actor. I started out on stage when I was about 11. And over the years, I did a lot of that kind of stuff. And this woman that died, that I'm doing the memorial service for, was a director and an actress. And that's what we used to call them, actresses. I guess they call them actors now. But she was a really wonderful, wonderful director and a good actress too. We did some stage work together. And, you know, I've known her husband for over 50 years. In fact, my wife and I were the ones that 12-stepped the two of them. They've stayed sober all that time. It's pretty amazing. So those kinds of relationships that develop over the years are really significant to me. I think that more than anything else, I used to be one of those people, the first, I don't know, 5 or 10 years of my sobriety, I was the guy who would say, well, the program is the steps. The fellowship is nice, but it's the program is the steps. And I don't mind telling you today, I think I was wrong. That really the most important thing for me is the fellowship. That, you know, we kind of come into the rooms and knock the chips off of each other, basically. And I had a lot of chips to get knocked off. I had a friend who used to say I left claw marks all over the rooms. I recommend it. You know, the face-to-face meetings we have around here, everybody seems to want to be sort of homogeneous. You know, they want to all agree and say the same things and talk about everything in the same way. That isn't how it was where I got sober. I got sober in Southern California. And the meeting I used to go to, because I was an actor, I ended up going to a lot of noon meetings. And there would be 120, 150 people in the meeting. This is a pretty significant size meeting. So you had to get up to a podium to talk. And what would happen is somebody would get up and share at the podium. And then the next person would get up and share at the podium and say, that's not how it is. Here's how it is. And there was no such thing as no crosstalk in those days. And I kind of enjoyed it. What was interesting is they disagree with one another, at least interesting to me. They disagree with one another, but then everybody go out to coffee together and laugh and have a good time. Nowadays, boy, if you disagree with somebody in the United States anyway, they're the enemy. You wouldn't dare say anything to them. That is just sad to me, but I'm sounding like my grandparents now. Here's how it used to be. Anyway, I don't know what that has to do with anything, but I think one of the things that helped me, and I know that in secular AA, there seems to be a rather vociferous minority that is anti-steps and anti-sponsors and anti-this and anti-that. But I have to tell you that I don't know that I would have made it without having the sponsors that I've had over the years. And I've changed sponsors several times because I moved around a lot. The sponsors I had did not tell me what to do. They didn't say you have to do this and you better do that or you're going to get drunk. Mostly they just tried to help me sort through my thinking, because I'm not anti-thinking, but what I was doing wasn't, I wouldn't really call it thinking anymore. I'd probably just call it circular reasoning, you know, just the same negative thought processes in my mind all the time. And working through that stuff, I think, is one of the main things that helped me with working the steps. It's not so much, you know, finding out what all my resentments were and going and apologizing. It was really about finding out what my thinking processes were and how I was seeing things and how I was behaving that didn't go along with what I said I believed. You know, the old 60s saying, you tell me what you believe with your words and I'll tell you what you believe by your behavior, that kind of thing. So that really was helpful to me. As I said, I've had several sponsors over the years, and none of them really were what you might call the monster variety. At least I'd call them that, because I don't want somebody telling me what to do. And you know, I'm an adult, for crying out loud. And most of the guys I sponsor, I feel that way about. They're adults. It's not up to me to tell them what to do. I just try and listen. What's fun is I get to listen to them talk, and eventually I hear them say something, and I'll sort of rephrase it back to them, and they think I'm brilliant, because how did you come up with that? He just told me this. So what can I tell you? Working the steps also gave me an opportunity to kind of dig deep and look at, what do I believe? I was probably 10 years sober or so, 11 years sober, and I ended up in a treatment center for depression, chronic depression. And one of the things that happened for me is I found out I really did need to go back and look at my belief system around theology, around theological issues. And that's when I really came to believe that I came to not believe, is what I did. And sort of went more on a Buddhist route. It was probably, I was somewhere in my 20s, 20 years sober, maybe 25, when I started actually telling people, I don't believe in God. That's not part of my belief system. And by that, I don't mean God like as some amorphous energy that floats through the universe. I mean God in the traditional sense of what that word generally has meant over the years, and that is some separate being that's in charge that'll tell you what to do and how to do it, and damn you to hell if you don't. And I've had the experience of people rolling their eyes on me or leaving the room if I start talking, which, you know, how can you not like that? You know, oh, I'm powerful. They leave every time I talk. So I've had all those experiences, but frankly, I'm more concerned about the person coming in than I am about the people who are hanging around wanting people to believe what they believe. I don't think the thing is about it, what you believe. In a sense, it's about what I did that helped. You know, I went to just a ton of meetings, and I was not really able to work the first couple of years of my sobriety. It was just meetings. And we used to go on a lot of 12-step calls because there weren't a lot of treatment centers around in those days. We had like Chic Chadel and some of those old style treatment centers, but not much. So we did a lot of 12-step calls, and that was really helpful. And I've had a great time. I ended up going back to school and going all the way through to the PhD level, which I do not recommend. I wouldn't do it again, I'll tell you that. Or if I did, I'd do it for history instead of computers and English, which is what I did. And all the way through, it's, you know, I have my struggles. And I still do to this day. You know, this idea that there's a there to get to. There is no there, except for right here. But life has gotten a lot easier inside. And for me, that's makes the ticket worth taking. You know, I always wanted to have some peace and serenity inside. And, you know, I did my LSD trips to try and find it. I did my religion trips to try and find it. And sometimes once in a while that would occur. But today it's not about some sort of metaphysical plane of existence where I can walk placidly amid the noise and haste with long flowing robes and untouched by anything like a real human emotion. Today it's more about just being okay with myself and pretty much not so much with the world. I'm not really too okay with the world today. It seems crazier than even in the 60s and 70s. It's but I'm not out to try and make everybody see it my way and do it my way. And that's to me more important than almost anything. I get an opportunity to, I'm still teaching part-time online, and I enjoy that. I like to teach. I actually spent several years teaching at university level, and then I went into teaching English as a second language, and I just really enjoy it. That's what I'm doing today. It's or normally would do at this time, actually, but I canceled the class so I could be here and so that I could have some time to work on this memorial service I'm working on. Anyway, so what I've learned over the years is pretty much all the basics. You know, when I'm up late at night and I can't sleep, I get up and I go write or I go meditate. And for me, meditation has been really important. In fact, my first sponsor in the early days had me go and learn meditation to the best of my ability because of the way that my mind worked. I mean, my mind was always chewing me up and all this negative raka-raka that was going on in my mind. And so he had me learn some meditation techniques. In those days, it was more like creative visualization is what I would call it now. But I've also then spent a lot of time learning from people who have learned more formal techniques for meditation. And that's been very helpful to me. And at this point, my meditation consists primarily of just sitting and breathing and paying attention, which sounds a lot simpler than it is. It's actually very simple. It's just difficult. And that is very helpful to me. So I don't really have anything more to add, I don't think. You know, the old sayings is just take it one day at a time. And that's what I try and do. I think I mentioned it's 14,975 days, as my friend Jeb likes to point out, the number of days. And yeah, thanks, Mark, for asking me to do this. And thanks, everybody, for being here and paying attention to the extent that you have. And if you haven't, that's okay, too. And that's about it. I want to hear from everybody else. Thanks for sharing my birthday with me.